T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Well, it is a good evening to you, and I be at 9:05 even Thursday evening on your fan, New York City. Steve Summers here, and you there, Peter Hoffman, Brian Rascona. They on the other side, 1-877-337-6666 for a final 1 hour schmooze in the SPRTS. Right up until Chris Moore. He's coming your way at 10 on your fan, New York City. We'll spend a few minutes with Michael Vorkunov. And Michael, I hope I got the name right. Usually it's Michael I have trouble with, but I hope I got your last name okay.
You've got no qualms for me.
Very good. And you're with The Athletic, and that's also very important to mention as well. What is going on? Well, first of all, before we get to the Knickerbockers and a little bit with the NBA, the Brooklyn Nets certainly, after their 8-18 beginning, have turned things around and have electrified their fan base. Michael, I mean, how do you explain?
It's been really fun to watch. It's been almost a confluence of so many good events on their end. You know, Kenny Atkinson put in a program with that team in his first year 3 years ago, setting out a style that he wanted the team to play with, and now they've added talent throughout the years, and now you have guys like Jared Allen, Spencer Dinwiddie, D'Angelo Russell, and they're all playing really well, even without Caris LeVert, and it's like an almost magical season for them, despite losing 8 games in a row at one point and losing LeVert, and it's just, you know, they're a playoff team now, and this is finally a good basketball team in New York.
And they did lose. We did hear today about Dinwiddie. He's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks, torn ligaments in the thumb. However, I mean, the team, what is it now, 18 out of 23, and D'Angelo Russell, I mean, who does he think he is, Michael?
Yeah, they bought a lottery pick basically when they traded for him from the Lakers, and he really had some tough times in L.A. Obviously, some of his off-the-court stuff was documented pretty well, and he struggled a little bit on the court, too. I think he's going to be a free agent this summer. He wasn't really sure what kind of player he'd be, and look at him now. He's almost all-star level. He's becoming a great scorer off the pick and roll, and this is the lottery talent that was pick number 2 a few years ago, blossoming in a great system that just fits him perfectly almost.
Would I be laughed at by people like yourself who really get the shoes dirty, working every day, doing the work that you have to do with the NBA, with all the teams? Would I be laughed at if I would say Atkinson, Coach of the Year?
I don't think so. I think he's a great candidate for everything that they've had to go through this year, for the program that he's built in Brooklyn, for developing the talent that they have. I think he's definitely a contender. I don't see why anyone would laugh at you.
And their front office is seemingly doing the right thing. They're holding on to their draft choices, especially those draft choices that are number one.
Yeah, that's new for the Nets, right? Having their own first-round pick. And I think it was interesting, the inflection point for the organization almost came this summer. They finally had their first-round pick. I don't know if they're necessarily projected to be even a bottom-of-the-East playoff team, but they decided to try to win this year, win as many games as they could, maximize their results, not tank. And they again decided to do the same thing when LeVert went out. So those two decisions alone really set the way for the franchise, and it's led to this record and to them being a possible playoff team now. So Sean Marks deserves credit for making those decisions above anything else.
Would I be showing disrespect in a very cynical way, and also as a Knickerbocker fan, if I were to say, well, it's January and the very, very good teams kind of maybe put things on cruise control until seeding becomes an issue or until we get to the postseason when the games really matter. Does that take something away from the 18 out of 23 for the Brooklyn Nets?
Yeah, I think that takes a lot away. To be called a good team, you have to win the games and you have to make it to the postseason, right? That happens in December. That happens in January and in February.
Mm-hmm.
The Nets are doing that right now. They beat a lot of good teams over this stretch. I think they're 17-5 over the last 22 games. This, you know, it's a good team, and they're not doing it during the dog days of the basketball season. They're playing competitive teams. I think it's kind of more of a myth that teams take large swaths of the season off. Brooklyn is doing it, and they're doing it in a for-real type of way.
And they do deserve all the credit that they can get, even if some of us are going to be a little bit on the cynical side. Are now, if you're a Knickerbocker fan, it's an entirely different story. However, the silver lining is, and you tell me if this formula is surefire. Okay, nobody is saying they're tanking. I mean, listen, you know, the players out there on the floor, they're trying very hard. They may not be very good. They may remind you more of a D-League team on occasion, more than on occasion. But nonetheless, they're losing a lot of games. So the Knickerbocker fan looking for the silver lining is saying, okay, maybe the number one pick in the lottery, and then maybe you get Kevin Durant to come to New York, and then you woo Kyrie Irving, and then you get one of those players from Duke, certainly Zion Williamson is on the mind of a lot of Knickerbocker fans. But does this kind of formula guarantee that the Knickerbockers, more sooner than later, Michael, will turn things around?
No, I don't think it guarantees anything. There's a lot of risk to the path that the Knicks are taking. Sure, if you get Zion Williamson and Kevin Durant and Kristaps Porzingis re-signs and comes back, that's basically Knicks fan fiction, right? That's how they hope everything goes down. But this is the first year of the new NBA lottery reform. Even if you have the worst record in the league, you have a 14% chance of getting number one pick. And even, you know, that means you have an 86% chance of not getting number one pick and potentially Zion Williamson. Kevin Durant isn't guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
And it could definitely be a situation where, you know, they get the third, fourth pick. They don't get Durant. They don't get Kyrie Irving. And next season, 2019-2020, they get a rehabbing Kristaps Porzingis and they roll over the roster. And then how much better are you next year than this year? That's the problem with going down this type of path. You have to really commit to it and be comfortable with all the different possible outcomes.
And what's going to be with Kander? He wants to be traded. He made that announcement last night. The bottom line is he's not playing. He wants to play. He's a double-double waiting to happen. But Fizdale doesn't put him in the lineup and last night didn't play him at all. What's going to happen with him?
I think I can safely say that it looks like it's heading for a breakup of some sort. I mean, I don't know how tenable it is to have Kanter on the roster, nightly after every game explaining how much he wants to essentially be headed to a new team if he's not playing or starting. I don't think that would work for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
The Knicks have taken calls on Kanter. It's hard to find a trade for him because he does make so much, $18.6 million. So, you know, It'll last, but I can't see it lasting much longer. It's either by trade or by buyout. There has to be a resolution to it. I don't think it works for either side for this to linger into the middle of February.
And Alonzo Trier with the social media, with the Twitter, now he's responding to a fan, and I'm sure you'd be the first to advise him, Michael, if you were in that kind of a situation, to ignore whatever it is that you're hearing or reading from with the Twitter accounts from everybody and anything and everything that is social media. I would imagine, Michael, you would advise Mr. Trier, ignore what fans may have to say about you.
My first advice for anyone is to stay off Twitter if you can. I fail at that too often. It seems like he did last night too. And look, I get it. You get heated in the, you know, after a game, after a tough loss, but I think you have to, if you're a professional athlete, you have to kind of work under the assumption that anything you tweet, even if it's in a DM, may eventually go public. And that's what happened with Schreier. And it worked out poorly, right? But that's, if you're the Knicks, you hope that's a learning opportunity and he's not sliding into any other DMs late at night trying to heckle fans who are trying to get at him after a loss.
Do you get the impression that most of what you see on a daily basis with the fans responding to the teams that they like and responding to the teams that they don't like, do you get the impression, Michael, that a lot of what is seen and going viral with social media is way, way too negative, more so than positive?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think Twitter is a reflection of us as a society in some way, right? We love drama. We love storylines. If you can, it's easy to be catty on there. I've been guilty of it of all times, too. So that's what Twitter is almost feeds into, right, is getting the worst of us at times. And anyone can be guilty of that.
Last night at Madison Square Garden in New York City, we saw Harden go off for 61. And when the Nets were in Houston and played overtime not long ago, we saw Houston taking 73s. What has happened to the NBA, Michael?
You don't like 70 or 63s a night?
No. No, I want to see what I used to see. I want to see a little bit. What do you think anybody now recognizes, like, any kind of play underneath the basket, like in the low post, God forbid? And nobody plays any defense. Nobody wants to touch anybody outside the arc. Nobody, you can't do that anyway. And what we saw from Harden last night, to me, was so, I mean, it's like almost like the carnival, like a carnival sideshow. I mean, he's a wonderful player. I understand that. I mean, that step he takes back and the quick release and driving to the basket. Nobody can guard the guy. But where was the team basketball with Houston? And they almost lost the game with him getting 61. And then there's 73s. And hold on just a second. The Warriors just scored 51 points in the first quarter. Wait just a second. Klay Thompson just hit his first 10 threes he took. What has happened to the NBA, Michael? You have to explain to me.
The math has won out, and the Rockets are an extreme example of that. You know, the math dictates that shots at the rim and threes are the most efficient shots, and so teams are really playing to that. The mid-range game, for the most part, is, you know, kind of working its way out of the league. There are some people who still do it, but there's a lot of teams that don't want to take those shots at all. James Harden is kind of, I don't really know how to describe him. He's a singular tour de force in the NBA, and I know that there's a lot of fans who love watching him, and there's some, like you, who don't seem to like it from night to night. It's kind of, you know, what your flavor is, and I love watching the Warriors. I think they play beautiful basketball, and James Harden is magnificent. But I can see why some people miss the days of battling underneath the basket and Karl Malone and Hakeem Olajuwon and all those types of guys. But it's tough to be a post-oriented offense anymore and trade twos for threes.
I understand all that. Well, or in Harden's case, fours. Because he loves drawing that foul, doesn't he, outside the arc, Michael?
He does it so well, too, with that. You know, he's the only guy you're scared of going backwards away from the rim.
But the NBA has become one-dimensional. I'm sure you want to see a little bit more underneath the basket once in a while, yes?
Yeah, sure, from time to time. But I like watching these guys operate, you know, from the perimeter and watching all the ball movement and break, you know, defender down off the pick and roll. I think it's a lot more fluid at times. It's a different type of basketball. I enjoy watching it. I can't complain about the style of play because, you know, I don't miss the days of the low 80s scores. And, you know, that those types of games can be rough to watch, too.
No, we need Larry Siegfried. We need Red Auerbach with the cigar. We have to go back to those some of those days, too. See, here's the thing. Don't tell me that you love watching the mouthpiece and the shimmy show up everybody on the opposing bench by hitting another three and dancing his way down the court. What kind of sportsmanship is that, Michael?
I look, What kind of sportsmanship is Jordan shrugging after he hits all those threes against the Blazers in you know, the NBA Finals? It's theater to me. I love watching these guys act, and part of it is just performance, right? And I don't know, maybe it's me growing up in this latest era of the NBA as a fan, but I want to see them be provocative, and I want to see them. It's wrestling in some ways. It's high school types of drama, and that's what I love. That's why the NBA has become so fan friendly over the years, and really made an ascent probably as the, you know, second biggest sport in North America.
And you love the system. You love where the mouthpiece and the shimmy with the Warriors. How they go about, first they get Kevin Durant, now they have DeMarcus Cousins, the rich get richer, the poor have children. This is not the way the NBA should be for competitive balance, Michael.
Look, I think that's delving into some kind of capitalist critique, but it is what it is. You know, the rich, the only way to get stars is to have stars, and the teams that don't have them can't get them, and if you have one and you're a small market team, you might lose them. And I think there's a bigger picture question in place there, and whether you want to have teams like the Warriors or the 90s Bulls, who are kind of monoliths around the league, but it makes people care, and they're interested, right? Everyone cared about the LeBron-era Heat. Everyone cares when there's these great super teams and everyone else is trying to chop them down.
By the way, if the Knickerbockers had some of these players, we would have no complaints at all, Michael. I want to thank...
I don't think so. I think everyone in New York would be happy that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And anyway, look, Michael, I can't thank you enough for a couple of minutes here. I appreciate it. And do take care of yourself.
Thanks, Steve.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.